This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, March 6th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kbo.fm on the web. Well, another Portlander charged with conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists, and another round of leaking tanks at Hanford. Of course, we all know that the only thing worse than finding a leaking tank at Hanford is finding half a leaking tank at Hanford. And medals for the gamers who control the drones that dish out targeted assassinations. Why are they higher than the Purple Cross, the Bronze Star? A lot of people are wondering about that. And perhaps the man to explain it will be our new CIA director, and I suppose we might even term him Drone Master, John Brennan. It's torture dished up from the air. First, the National Weather Service has this for us, however. Showers today, highs near 47, light winds. And tonight, again, it's going to be a wet one. Overcast skies, lows around 38, and medium winds. Tomorrow, again, we have those cloudy skies, showers, a high near 49. Tomorrow night, it'll be cold, lows around 37, and not much in the way of wind driving it. So the alternative forecast, we got a last quarter fruit moon in Sagittarius, 23 days old now. The synodic outlook is not a good time to sow anything. Work on weeds and compost. Also, you might take a look for some of the root and tuber type things that do well if you leave them in the ground and sometimes are overlooked. The biodynamic forecast has this moon in Sagittarius. It's a fire sign. So if you're starting seedlings, consider working with the fruiting plants. Don't forget, too, that it's you're working under a waning moon. So those who do practice farming or growing food with attention paid to the moon, this is not really a great time for anything in the way of seeds. Maintenance, of course, as always. The sidereal people say that with the moon in Sagittarius, we have dry and barren conditions. I don't know about dry, but it's fairly barren. Though things are beginning to pop right now, it's a good time to plant onion sets and bulbs. Ah, you forgot to plant onions last November? Well, get on it now. And that's it for both the conventional and the alternative forecasts. So, leaking tanks at Hanford. One of the explanations from the government, who was supposed to be monitoring these things, was we shouldn't worry too much because the fact that there's less in the tank, it could be due to evaporation. Somehow I don't feel mollified by that piece of news for any number of reasons. We were speaking this morning. We're very happy to welcome back Dr. Walter Tamositis, the first whistleblower at Hanford, the first person to call attention, and in fact, in the line of duty, call attention to some of the problems that we're seeing right now. Maybe if people had listened to Dr. Tamositis years ago, none that we would not be facing these problems, or perhaps these problems are just not solvable. Good morning, Walter. Thanks for being with us today.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, we're well, thanks. And you?
I'm doing fine.
Good to have you with us. So the thing about the tanks and the leaks, and these are single-sided containers, there's less money due to the sequestration. And really don't know what sort of what some of the substances in the tanks might have combined with others and turned into. Can you talk a bit about what are the dangers of the leaks and the vagueness, the vague terms in which it's being described?
Okay, sure. There are 177 storage tanks at Hanford. Of the 177, about 149 are what they call single shell tanks. That means it's a tank with no additional wall around it. 28 of them are what they call double shell tanks. All the tanks are essentially past their design life, and they're made out of carbon steel, Chris. And no carbon steel rusts, and it corrodes, and no carbon steel has ever lasted forever. And these tanks are past their design life. A third of the single shell tanks, about 50 or so, have linked already. The real concerning fact most recently in the last few months is the leaking double shell tank, and they also suspect there could be some more double shell tanks leaking, and they're checking into that. But the leaking double shell tank is the one of concern, because the double shells were thought to, you know, that they, quote, would last way beyond their design life, and here's one of the first ones built, and it's leaking. So, of course, the danger is the material leaking into the ground, and if it hits an aquifer, which is a water stream under the ground, you know, it can get carried away. So the environmental damage to the area, and if it hits a water aquifer, is the major concern. You know, and the tanks will not last forever. What it shows is we really need the WTP, the VIT plant, because the VIT plant's got to get up and operating before this material can get out of these tanks. And the longer Bechtel delays the VIT plant, the greater the risk of having a catastrophic failure in a tank in the tank farm.
So, I've got a quick question here. I just want to jump in with this. This is really the ball's in Bechtel's court, so sequestration should not even be an issue here. That the corporations who were in charge of building there at Hanford should bear the responsibility of fixing things that were pointed out, or should have been pointed out a long time ago.
Oh, sure. In the WTP, if you said that the problems in WTP should have been addressed, I would say, yes, ma'am, they should have. The problems have been known for years, and the longer Bechtel delays fixing them, the longer it will take. And as you know, Secretary Chu now has formed committees to look into how to resolve the problems. And the longer it takes, the greater the risk that there'll be a problem in the tank farm. So just sitting back and delaying the WTP or letting it be delayed is an unacceptable answer. It's got to move forward. Now, relative to the budget, when you hear like $170 million to be cut out of the Hanford budgets, I mean, the Hanford site gets, I'm going to estimate, over $2 billion a year. So $167 million is, you know, like 5%. Now, that's a lot of money, but it's in percentage-wise, it's only about 5%. So they really need to focus their attention on what to do with the leaking tanks, how to get the material into a safer position, and they also need to get the WTP built and operating.
One final question. Sorry we're short of time, but one of the statements that troubled me was 6 of the 14 underground tanks, they say that causes other than leaks, such as evaporation, could explain lower levels. Well, I don't like the idea of this stuff being in a tank. I can understand a glass of water evaporating, and I can understand lots of things, but not this. And the fact that
the tanks could, some of the material in the tank indeed is water, and it could evaporate. But in the case of the double shell tank, they have found material between the two liners of the tank. You have the tank, the inner tank, and you have the outer tank, and they found material between those two walls, which is not evaporation. In the other tanks, they know that it is leaking into the ground. So it's much more than just evaporation.
Thank you so much for that. I do have more questions, but we'll save that for another time. As we all know, Hanford's not going to stop leaking on its own anytime soon. Thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Walter Tomasides.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Bye.
Thanks so much. He's been the first whistleblower at Hanford. For all we know, we owe Dr. Tomasides our very lives. There's been in Portland yesterday morning, a chap Reza Kadir Khan. He was worked with the city of Portland and their wastewater plant treatment plant, and apparently he had had doings with people in Pakistan and is associated with a bombing in that country. Khan has so far pleaded not guilty and on this charge of conspiracy to provide material support to terrorists, which is a very interesting charge. It has been overused and abused in this country countless times. There will be more on that coming out. But what I think is important to note right now is take that idea and couple it with a bill which has been introduced to the Oregon legislature that would create a felony out of free speech and protest activities insofar as forest activism is concerned. The bill is HB 2595, and it clearly is created specifically to keep activists out of Oregon's forests. It's not the first time such a bill has been tried. We also have this, there's a second bill known as the Interference with Agricultural Operations Bill. That's one where you're not allowed to take pictures of animals being harmed in factory farms. You're not allowed to take pictures of leaking chemicals at enormous agribusiness operations. And these two bills together are specifically designed to go after people who do in fact stand up not just for their own rights, for the rights of all of us, rights to clean air, clean water, and food sources that do not involve the inhumane treatment of animals. Those are two very dangerous bills. And we know, too, of course, that those who might, if such legislation does pass, and it's likely to pass in some form, many people feel that the enforcement will be draconian, swift, sure, brutal, designed to set examples and to induce fear amongst the resistance. It's important to be very much aware of it. Don't forget to, as in Glenn Greenwald's recent book, he points out that those at the very top enforcing the laws can get away with pretty much anything they want. Those who are perceived to be weaker in terms of their ability to defend themselves in court, and that means money, those are the targets of these laws, which are so antithetical to what our constitutional rights give us, that it is incomprehensible that we have these. We have a very short time left. In that time, we want to speak with Jody McCaffrey because there have been important developments as far as LNG at Jordan Cove. Good morning, Jody, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Well, today, the Senate Rules Committee, what's happening today?
They are making decisions on several port board commission positions. The governor has, of course, appointed recommended several appointees, and we, of course, oppose those because the people that he's recommended both support the liquefied natural gas. So that means we would have a commission that basically all supports it, and we're back to where we started with no say.
So you on the on the website Citizens Against LNG, you have outlined some of the points that people might want to make if they do decide to write a Dear Senate Rules Committee letter. Is it too late for people to sound off on this?
Well, their meeting was this morning.
Yes.
At 8. I haven't heard how it turned out, but I assume it will go to the full Senate, so now we have to just like start sending letters to all the senators.
Pounding away at that. Jody, we're completely flat out of time.
Okay.
Thank you so much for that. We're going to put links to the website Citizens Against LNG on the KBOO website. It looks like John Brennan is a shoo-in for our next CIA director. No, what a coincidence. Hugo Chavez has died. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, March 6, 2013. Kurt Lauer engineered the show today. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
flashpoints. Hugo Chavez, visionary leader of the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela, is dead. We'll feature an in-depth backgrounder with Eva Golinger, a former advisor to Chavez, on the man most likely to succeed Chavez as president. We'll speak to BBC and best-selling author Greg Palast, who broke the story on flashpoints of the U.S.-inspired attempt to kidnap, kill, or marginalize Chavez. And we'll feature excerpts from South of the Border, a powerful and enlightening documentary on Chavez and the other new radical leaders in Central and South America, done by Oscar-winning filmmaker Oliver Stone. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoint. Stay tuned. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We spoke with Eva Golinger just a week or so ago about who the likely follower would be, and that would be the current vice president of Venezuela. Listen to this. Can we just talk a little bit about where his work is now? Say a little bit about what his impact has been and the work that still lies ahead?
Absolutely. I mean, Hugo Chavez has, without a doubt, been one of the most important presidents that Venezuela has ever had throughout its history. He's brought the country back to what many consider to be a state of true independence, or maybe for the first time, and sovereignty. The natural resources of the country, strategic resources. Remember, Venezuela is the largest. Has the largest oil reserves of any country on our planet, which is a huge issue regarding why there's so much interest in the country and what that country represents to powerful interests around the world. And what Chavez has done is utilize those strategic resources to invest in the people of the country, the development of the nation, and its potential for progress. So his government over the past 14 years since he was first elected in 98. He was elected in 98. They had a constitutional process to redraft and